You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. Oh yes, dear listeners, I'm sorry for blasting your ears there a little bit, because I do seem that I am a little bit loud and a little bit too excited for today. And I actually have to be, and I'm here to transmit that same excitement to you for today, and we're going to try and get to the same buzz, or we're going to try and get you to the same buzz that I've been experiencing specifically in terms of today's particular servings, today's particular menu, or if we can call it the dish of the day. Now, yes, we jumped yesterday from a Namibian particular perspective, obviously, into now a African one. If you've seen the social media posts on today's particular social media platforms for Eagle FM and The Villager, and do remember too, if you've not been following us, you can follow us right there, get the regular updates during the course of the day, during the course of whenever, during, you know, as you obviously follow us. And some of the nice particular things is that we've achieved a lovely particular milestone itself in terms of interactions or followers on our social media platforms. So if you've been one of those followers, thank you once again for being with us, being a valuable stakeholder, and obviously being a participant in the various discussions we brought to you in the, I think it's a good 7 years or almost six years that Eagle FM. Yeah, it's almost 6 years now. That Eagle FM is now literally in grade zero right now. I'm sorry, guys. I'm thinking in the scope of humans, but obviously, yeah, in grade zero. And obviously the developmental curve now starts from grade one, which is obviously this particular curve we're now in, because by next year, I think it's May, April will be seven. So obviously we're just going to better heights, newer places, achieving newer dimensions, providing you with better knowledge, and obviously giving you the interactions and discussions that expand your knowledge bases for the better, for the, you know, obviously for something that you can actually take away and say, huh, this is good. So today's particular discussion, yes, as mentioned yesterday, I'm still flying solo for the rest of this week, specifically since my particular partner in crime, you know, is still kicking it a little bit back. I'm hoping he's kicking it back a little bit and taking a rest. But obviously he'll be back next week with us, where we'll be, you know, be going through as the regular tag team in terms of providing you the organized chaos that we always do in our analysis. So where I left off before my, you know, brain jumped to that particular point is that we're jumping whole body first into a particular African dimension here, because earlier today, the Luanda Financing Summit for Africa's Infrastructure Development kicked off in Luanda, Angola. Now, this particular discussion, this particular summit itself is going to be a 3-day event that's going to last until Friday. Friday. Which is the 31st of October, obviously. And it has heads of state there, and it has various particular dignitaries of the AU itself there in terms of talking about this particular discussion. Now, there's something, guys, I've got to share with you, because I've tried to make sense of some of the particular themes that the AU, our particular continental organization by which Namibia is party to and a part of and a member of. Somehow, they have these weird themes, and then the theme is based upon a very influential piece of document or piece of paper that sounds lovely in its spirit, lovely in its essence, gives you the most loftiest of hopes and feelings. And then the moment you dial back and you decide, let me get out of this lovely, you know, a potentially drug-induced dream that I'm experiencing. And the moment you shake off all that particular ecstasy and, you know, that euphoria that you've been experiencing, just in terms of your brain traveling probably to La La Land, you go and look at the reality and you go like, yeah, ne? What actually changed? What actually changed? Now, here's a startling scene. And this is a particular scene that has to achieve certain particular dimensions for us. Now, before I get the ball rolling, and actually, before I set that scene as well, I want to have someone else to set the scene for us. So, you're going to have a quick listen to Mahmoud Ali Yusuf, who is the African Union Commission's chairperson. And, yes, for like 2 seconds you'll hear French, but he switches over to English because his speech is the only one that was a dual language scenario. I heard slight phrases here and there in João Lourenço's, that's not the Angolan president's particular speech. A few other particular takes here from what's the president from Burundi and another president also. But it was technically a whole bunch of French, one Portuguese speaker, and all I can serve up is literally Ali Yusuf, who's technically bilingual in that right. But let's have Ali set the scene for us in terms of our discussion. So what you're going to hear is the AU Commission's chairperson's particular speech. Is pretty short. It's to the point. And specifically what he cites here in terms of what Africa is supposed to be achieving. Let's have a listen to this.
Tenir la connectivité continentale et renforcer notre position dans les chaînes de valeur mondiale. Your Excellencies, beyond financial instruments, what we must strengthen is our collective coherence. External financing remains useful, but it cannot and must not be the driving force of our development. We must move from a logic of assistance to a logic of alliance, where partners align their engagement with priorities defined by Africa itself. In a global context marked by geopolitical fragmentation and the relocation of value chains, African integration has become a condition of strength. If we do not master our own corridors, resources, and networks, others will do so in our place. Faced with the gradual disengagement of some traditional partners, our African solidarity must become our strategic safety net. That's why I propose that this Luanda summit be remembered as a political turning point, leading to the launch of a continental pact for the financing of African infrastructure built on three essential pillars: a strong political commitment by member states to align national priorities with continental corridors, a structured mobilization of the African private sector as a central actor of transformation, a coordinated and substantial access to global climate financing, notably through the Alliance for Green Infrastructure Africa, which could mobilize more than $500 million in its first phase. Yes, indeed. What we are building here are not roads and bridges. We are building an Africa that is connected, confident, sovereign, capable of asserting itself as a pole of balance and creativity in the world to come. Because ultimately, the true issue of financing is not money. It is trust. Trust in our institutions, in our capabilities, and in our shared destiny. May this Luanda summit mark a new momentum, that of an Africa investing in itself, believing in itself, and speaking with one voice to build the continent we wish to bequeath to future generations. Before I conclude, I would like to congratulate.
And just like that, dear listeners, just like that. And Africa specifically meant to achieve its promises and specifically to serve its particular purposes, not for someone else, but for who? For us. Just us. You and me. Straightforward stuff. So we obviously see a particular important I can't say clarion call because it was one man speaking. Clarion call is like, okay, all of us, you know, a sort of like a team speech, something similar to what the president did yesterday at the Ministry of Mines. You know, she showed up there and she said, you know, let's do a Spanbo sessie, Owens. And everybody was like, oh, okay, that's cool, having the head of state here and, you know, her whole bodyguards. Nice. Now, what you obviously see here is it was pretty short. And actually, before I continue, we'll quickly take this ad break and come back after it.
Kapena onda do, ya fa onda do ya shopai. Otori fakamo, opuketera enda do dipedu. Toi pumbi wa ei aise ngashi. E krama dilo mafera tano do mutayo rama ye presenta omiro ngai ari toma di kedora. Omiro ngai na ari esenda. Omiro ngai no wei kashi imwe. No shoyo. E kiro krama dilo mlongo. Dosu kai triana. Yo king brown sugar kedora. E fera omiro ngai mano no wei esenda. Omiro ngai no wei ashike ino futashi dufe. Onda do ya shopai. Enda do edi. Otino ngushu fio matu ngai ya novemba. Otura oyo tei. Oko shopai ta apuke. Kara o programa yo gacha ready steady cook ko One Africa TV. Otori te wano mapanduro. Ko shopai Namibia.
So we come back there from the quick break right there, dear listeners. You're here on your number one talk radio station. This is the home run from 4:30 up until 6. And obviously, well, we are slightly single for this week. I'll put it like that. However, getting back to where we left off just before the break, the discussion you've got to see is one that actually speaks a lot deeper. Now, let me set the scene for you with two particular talking points. Two particular talking points which are pivotal in terms of understanding the essence in what Yusuf actually said. Now, there's actually also a whole document which I'm also basing the discussion off in terms of the literature review for today. And it's two points primarily in terms of how you as a Namibian, you've got to see Namibia's particular budget. So when you see Namibia's budget, dear listeners, in some cases, you will hear some politicians, and this is predominantly an argument that once again popped up from some opposition party leaders, where they have been lamenting that Namibia's the debt that Namibia is borrowing as a government is a problem. Now, yes, in some cases, borrowing, let's say, to pay salaries is an issue. Borrowing to pay salaries is an issue. Because it technically means that the money is not being used for an investment purposes, let's say, to literally build a school or a hospital or something else, but it's actually to pay an immediate financial cash flow or an immediate cash flow pinch or to sort some sort of thing out. It's not the particular case I'm saying or stating that Namibia is in currently, because the discussion in a Namibian context is one based upon what we know. Now, if you've read the articles we've provided here on the Village Ibe platform in the past 2 weeks specifically, and the ones primarily that I wrote based upon the civil society interaction between Minister of Finance, that being Minister Shafuda, and the civil society, which was about 2 weeks back, 2.5 weeks back, the important thing there is that what you've got to look for is the development budget, not the operational budget. The operational budget is like a 10-page thing. Straightforward. It's a thing that some people in some cases try shouting for, clap hands for, but that's for the civil servants, for the public servants to feel happy about. The actual budget you've got to pay attention to is the one that says development budget. The development budget is the one that has been spent to a rate of less than 30%, as per Minister Shafuda's words herself, you know, 3 weeks back before 21 October, which was last week, before she, you know, gave her midterm budget review last week. It's Minister Shafuda who went out and engaged with local authorities, regional authorities across the country to try and understand from them. 8 months later, now also take into consideration, dear listeners, that the budgeting process literally came a month late. You know, we were accustomed to what the former Minister of Finance, that being former Minister Shimi, did, where he literally announced the particular budget a month before the government's financial year ended, which was 30, which is at the end of March, so that the new financial year starts on 1 April, which was a clever thing because you actually can literally adjust and be prepared for any new particular developments a month in advance. The announcement has been made a month in advance, so you know a month in advance what the particular view and what the particular position that government would take in terms of its various particular developmental investments. Now, at the heart of this is literally what the AU is trying to achieve. The AU is trying to convince all AU members, invest in yourselves by investing in us. They're not saying it as such, but I'm saying it for, you know, I'm just simplifying it for the case of what they're not saying. So what you need to understand here, dear listeners, is a clear-cut case of trust, just like Mr. Yusuf said, which I agree with him. It's a clear-cut case of who does not trust who, or who trusts who more. For example, I had a quick listen to President João Lourenço's, the Portuguese version, because that's all I could access technically. But then I accessed the brief of the summit itself, and President Angola's listed there that they themselves are working in tandem with SADC partners in achieving particular developmental goals for their purposes, but under a shared particular project scenario that they share with a SADC neighbor. So there's Namibia and Angola with the Baines hydroelectric power station. And then there is Angola, Zambia, and the DRC for the Lobito Corridor project itself. And according to Angola, the Lobito Corridor has attracted more than $6 billion in financing. Let me say that again. More than $6 billion in financing. To me, that sounds more like a railway line that you can build from Windhoek, and you can throw it all the way to Cairo in Egypt. And in between, you can still split it off somewhere in Lagos, so it runs all the way to Marrakesh. And from Windhoek, it can split all the way down into the rest of SADC this way. That's what it sounds like to me. $6 billion sounds like more than enough money. But then obviously, the discussion on the ground is based upon what does the local content policy look like, which is always the nitty-gritty. It's the true essence of the discussion. What does the local content policy actually look like? Now remember, I fused the Namibian perspective based upon how you as a Namibian, everyday Namibian, needs to look at the Namibian budget. Don't worry about a minister or a ministry's budget. Don't worry about that part. What you need to look for is a development budget, and what the development budget is doing across the country. Because currently, as it is encapsulated in a specific report of capital projects that we went through and obviously dissected here on the home run, is that there's a lot of centralization in the National Planning Commission in order to understand and achieve project ending times, meaning the project has to end. It must be finished. The construction must be completed. The installation must be completed. The erection of the particular facility or whatever needs to be completed. So it needs to mature. It needs to reach its project end. You can't be in a perpetual phase of saying, no, but the contractor decided to run away with the money. The contractor refused to build further because the contractor believes that they underquoted us. But that just tells me that people are afraid of taking the private sector contractors that they contract from to court. Take them to court, guys. Take them to court. Use the courts to force contractors who do things like that to finish the job because they said yes on paper. Now they're saying no to your face. And remember, saying yes on paper, signing a thing, is more powerful than you changing your mindset midway discussion just to say, you know, I don't feel like this discussion anymore. But you signed on the paper, on the dotted line. You're under a contractual obligation to literally complete said particular project. Finish the project for the particular amount that you signed off on. It is not the government's issue that you can't afford your G-Wagon from the underquoted amount that you underquoted the government for. That's not the government's issue. You were supposed to know how margins work. You were supposed to know, specifically in the construction sector, the distributors of cement, wood, and all other input costs or the particular other input materials. You do know that they are literally retailers, and retailers work on a 3-month negotiation period. So the prices you found at the start of that, at the start of one part of that 3-month period can change literally 3 months later. It can either go up or it can go down. And believe you me, it goes more up than down. Now that is literally what you see on the ground. The lofty talks here that specifically the Angolan president, Mr. Lourenço, all the other presidents and dignitaries at the Luanda summit that happened a little bit earlier today, they're obviously not interested in terms of what goes on the ground. They just want to see this particular continent-wide planning, discussions, meetings, and conferences literally translate to something material, something tangible, something of change, something that carries weight. Not just wasting hot air, saying a whole bunch of nice things, using a whole bunch of lovely vocabulary that you probably don't use every day, everywhere else in your daily life. All those particular talking points must translate to something tangible. For a moment, take Namibia out of this discussion. Take Namibia out of this discussion. Why do I say take Namibia out of this discussion? Because we've already got our own particular development plans. We know what we want to do. You and I, we know what we want to do. I'm not going to stress over the development plans of Namibia because it makes us look just that much more better in terms of planning. In terms of execution, installation, construction, and erecting the various particular facilities that we need actually to transform Namibia's economy to the particular desired state that we want to is a different discussion for another day. That actually talks about project completion. But even though supposedly the National Planning Commission stated also in that same particular oversight committee report from the National Assembly from the previous cycle that, you know, it has supposedly improved from 2018 up until now. Supposedly. Until we heard of the Namra situation here at the Mamuno border. Is it Mamuno? But yeah, where the contractor decided midway, they're not going to entertain this discussion anymore, and they just refused. But here's what I actually want you to also look at. Since you've now taken Namibia out of this continent-wide discussion we're talking about, there's a key particular development that's obviously taking place. Now, the key particular development has been, what do we want to see for Africa? And part of this is, how can we access financing? Right? Right? Now, here's a particular scenario that I want you to think about. Now, this is lovely professor. I keep mentioning him here on the home run. In terms of, you know, the knowledge that he dispenses. And I always try to stay interested in the particular updates on his YouTube channel that he provides regarding the various themes in the realm of economics. And it comes back down specifically to the theme of how to look at government debt once again. You see, this is not what Mr. Yusuf is highlighting, because obviously they're not yet talking about the money, the dinero, the mula. They're not yet there. They're calling for political, what's that one particular phrase that some of our callers started using? Political, political will. But it's not about political will. I mean, if something sounds good, and you can obviously see the utilitarian benefit or the overall public benefit in the project. And you can see that the positives greatly outweigh the negatives that have also been weighed upon and have also been thought about. Then technically that thing serves a good. There is no political will even needed there. If you can see, does it provide housing? Yes. Does it provide water? Yes. Does it provide electricity? Yes. What's the problem? What's the problem? Literally, what is the problem? Does it provide more healthcare, or does it still allow for the dispensation of healthcare in the various needed areas? Yes. Does it allow for, what you call it, more children to access universal education through the public school system? Yes. Does it allow for free meals to be dispensed at the public schools for children from needy families or from disadvantaged backgrounds? Yes. Now, what's the problem? The positive is immediately shouting at you. What's the problem? It's not a question specifically about political will. That's also why I could never buy into the political will discussion. Because here's the thing. The person is temporary, but the need is permanent. The need is permanent. It's also one of the particular reasons why I also kept saying, if you look at the malnutrition discussion in Namibia, and the one thing that particularly was annoying was, why would we report on statistics that the World Health and Ministry of Health had to go and collect? And, you know, where was Ministry of Agriculture in trying to solve malnutrition? Ministry of Agriculture's portfolio doesn't go anywhere. It's literally supposed to be a question of how do more people participate in agriculture in order to achieve or to eradicate the food insecurity component in Namibian life. And then you realize, oh, that's why people don't have money. They don't have money. And then you realize, okay, so there's another ministry that probably has to do its particular part in terms of eradicating this particular need. And then there was such a particular scenario back in 2005 to 2008, which was hosted in Omitara, the specific basic income grant, the universal basic income grant dimension that aimed to alleviate severe, I'll call it deprivation, because people are just blindly using the word poverty. I've also had to go and educate myself on the difference between deprivation and poverty. And the more I see that technically people who are considered poor actually suffer various levels of deprivation, and you can't clearly define what is poverty, then you realize, oh, it's a question of allowing people to gain access to certain particular things. So, you can obviously see that's the level that we try to achieve certain things. Now you get into the African context of things. In the African context of things, you really need political will. Now you need the political will. Now you also need to consider how each country technically plays a part in the various vicinities and regions of the continent. You've got Southern Africa, East Africa, West Africa, the Sahel region, North Africa above the Sahel region, because the Sahel region is a part of the Sahara Desert that literally combines and links a whole bunch of supposedly sub-Saharan countries and supposedly North African countries to each other. And technically that makes this one massive large community up there in, you know, that part above the equator. And you also have to ask a particular question based upon that dimension in terms of, okay, so what's the actual matter here? So the reason why I started off with a dimension also on, even though Ali Yusuf was talking about, hey, look at, what's the thing's name? Look at trust as a matter. So he's obviously appealing to human dimension, a human trait. Whereas obviously we would have immediately said, hey, listen, guys, just pay your dues. Let's put money in the African Union as a project for it to be self-sufficient, because his speech literally started off with that notion. And I can literally read it here for you. beyond financial instruments, what we must strengthen is our collective coherence. External financing remains useful, but it cannot and must not be the driving force of our development. Europe, EU money must not be driving our development agenda. Who's the other partner? There's obviously also China. There's obviously also Germany separately for the African Union. There's someone else as well. I think there's the Americans as well. And obviously, as you can see, it's literally the same particular dimension, the same particular picture that dominates Namibia's particular developmental partners. So why is it someone else's money determining how we achieve our particular internal goals, determining how we do our particular thing, how we meet our particular African needs, and what we wish to do? But then you get hit with another piece of reality. So on the group, on our work group here at Eagle FM, Hende, I'm telling a little bit of story. I'm sorry, Hende, for using your name. So Hende asked a particular question back on Sunday in terms of, he shared a specific thing on the work group, and he asked, intra-African trade is an issue. Why is it an issue? And, you know, I sometimes don't like thinking too much, because in some cases you can clearly see what the answer is. African countries, which is a similar thing to the problem with African, connecting African skies, meaning connecting African airline carriers with each other's airports, is that we don't want to see each other's countries. We don't want to be tourists of each other, but we would like to fly to Europe, and we would like to fly to the US, and we would like to fly to Asia, because we believe that those places look better than our continent. We don't want to see each other's continents. We don't want to spend money in terms of tourist money in each other's countries. We believe that each other's economies and each other's particular value additions or potential value propositions are too poor. Yeah, I'll use the word poor there. Are too poor. Is too substandard. We need to see a lot more other kinds of people that don't look African. That's literally what the Gen Zs are saying. I'm a millennial, guys. So, you know, I can beat down. I can bully a Gen Z. Don't worry. That's literally what the millennials are saying. The Gen Zs and the millennials are saying. They don't want to see other Africans. Now you are sitting already with a major problem right there. How then will your AFCFTA kick off? If the very people you are trying to encourage to literally invest in your continent don't want to invest in your continent. In many cases, they don't want to even stay anymore in your continent. They don't see a future on your continent. Because there's nothing that you're doing for your there's nothing you're doing for the people on this continent. Guys, these are realities. Go talk to any 15-year-old, 19-year-old, 21-year-old to 25-year-old person, male or female. Go ask them. What do they want? What dreams do they have? Some of them will tell you, I'd like to pursue a sports dream, and I'd like to play for whatever European football team in Europe, and I'd like to be there. They're looking for role models in terms of foreign footballers. They won't even tell you that they want to be even Peter Shalulile. They won't even tell you that. They won't tell you that, guys. They won't even tell you, I'd like to go and live in Johannesburg. I'd like to invest in Johannesburg and then, you know, boost Namibian production or Namibian export value by trying to sell Namibian products in such. They won't even say things like that. They won't. Go talk to them. I know, guys. I've got a niece who's sitting in Germany right now. She told her parents straight up, I don't want to come back. I've got another friend sitting in Germany as well, who literally technically is giving the body language of, I don't want to come back. So if Africans are telling African leaders with body language and through tickets and through immigration transfers from Namibia to other parts of the world that they don't want to come back, you're sitting with a big problem. You're technically sitting with a problem in terms of where, firstly, the national development planning in your country and in the continent is not going anywhere. No one is improving on anything. It's not going anywhere. Let it sink in. It's not going anywhere. All young people are saying today, specifically, and primarily those that find themselves on the private school sectors of private school circuits of Namibia, many of them will say, we don't see ourselves studying in Namibia, trying to live in Namibia. We want to be where, either in Korea or in Japan or wherever, just there, and to stay there rather than being here. That's the future that Africa faces. That's the future that Africa faces. Now, I showed you a human element. That was one of the human elements. I showed you a Namibian perspective. I showed you a particular insight in terms of what one of the leading figures in the AU obviously is stating in terms of what view we must take. But here's the thing. His words speak so soundly true. That African Union member countries are literally failing to fund the body itself because they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay. The African Development Bank sees it as an issue that member countries who need development financing and funding from the African Union as a continental body that represents African needs or is borrowing or is getting development aid funding from the EU, from Germany, from China, from the US, from whoever. And then the same AU body is getting the same financing from the EU, from Germany, from China, from the US, from wherever. Paul Biya in Cameroon, supposedly, I say supposedly because some people became angry in Cameroon, in Yaoundé, over the weekend about the election results, because it seems that a 93-year-old president is going to potentially be Africa's longest serving living president. Not president, sorry, president. A president that has been on record to be worse than Joe Biden in terms of not having his entire cognitive functions properly functioning. In many cases, he would sometimes ask where he is. In some cases, he would ask, he would even find himself in terms of his, you know, how his mind works now at that age, at that advanced age, where he doesn't know if he's in Cameroon or on an official assignment, representing his country, because he flies from Switzerland to Cameroon. Now I'm happy Namibia is not on Cameroon's level. We're not. I hope so, and I want us to stay that way. I obviously don't want to see any particular African leader across the continent also living it up in a European country, and 90% to 80%, 80 to 90% of his people literally have never been on a plane before, besides the footballers that represent, that are literally like rock stars in their country. But then once again, I come down to a sports reference even. If you go talk to any 9 to 25 year old person and ask them, what dreams do they have? Does the dreams include staying in Namibia or on the African continent? And I guarantee you almost 100% of them will say no. Now, if you've got that level of pessimism on the African continent, then all the lofty speeches of Africa having the workforce of the future, having the resource for the future, the resources for the future, and having all the other nicely affordable things for the future. But the reality speaks of that the people who are supposed to be there for the future of those developments don't want to be there for that future. They don't want to be on this continent for that future. I'll strike you another particular thing. Where I left off in my train of thought, starting off in this particular discussion in terms of asking any 9 to 25-year-old, if they have any dreams of still being on the African continent, is also a central particular viewpoint in terms of what they are exposed to. But before we continue, guys, ad break.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So we come back there from the extended ad break right there. And obviously, dear listeners, where you find yourself here on this lovely day, specifically in the capital, I do hope that those listeners of ours across the country, also you guys are also enjoying the same particularly lovely climate, obviously, that has been served up here in the capital. And wherever you might be listening to us from, whether it's locally here in Namibia or internationally on the Eagle FM application, welcome to the home run session of this lovely Tuesday. And obviously that you are tuned in and enjoying the particular conversation here on offer. Now, as always, I am someone that's a little bit liberal in terms of participation. You can call through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen also to what you wish to share in terms of today's particular discussion. Where I left off was another particular train of thought, actually. It was the conversation specifically with my colleague here at Eagle FM, Hende, where he asked in terms of the intra-African trade scenario that is dire. It's bad. Literally bad. Well, obviously, if you're now Namibia and South Africa, you know, things are hunky-dory and they're pretty rosy and, you know, everything is just, you know, jolly-o, you know, everything is just, how's it put? And the Namibians are going like, alles is name, brah, and then, you know, everybody's just cool jazz. However, the rest of Africa does not like each other and they don't trade much with each other because obviously the AFCFTA is dependent upon Africans literally leveraging the message and the spirit of the AFCFTA. So on the question in terms of what's the issue with intra-African trade, it's pretty straightforward. And like I said, we'll get straight to the point. Africa is only known for three things: cheap labor, cheap land, cheap resources. Let that sink in. That's all Africa is known for. That's all Africa will ever be known for. Unless you're South Africa or Morocco or who's the other manufacturing hub on the continent? And Kenya. Unless you're those three countries. Other than that, Africa is known for those things primarily. Cheap land, cheap labor, cheap resources. Hence the reason also why in the EU's Global Gateway plan and project, they specifically have various legislation, EU legislation they brought about. If you guys read the article of this past Monday's e-paper, the one that I specifically wrote, based upon that in household waste, specifically household electronic equipment and electronic devices waste, you find a lot of critical rare earth or critical raw materials or rare earth materials in that waste. So we're talking about cell phones, microwaves, TVs, computers, all those particular consumer durable devices that are based from electronic disposition. Those things contain a lot of particular minerals, or should I rather say precious metals in some cases, and certain particular obvious, you know, rare earth minerals. And the EU is at an advanced level whereby for a 27 nation bloc plus 4 additional, partner countries to the EU, that they're already exploring how to capture and recycle and rework that waste back into the overall manufacturing scene or the economic base for the European zone's particular manufacturing base to actually have access to affordable critical rare earth minerals or critical raw materials. And in the Critical Rare Earth or Critical Raw Materials Act or legislation of the EU, which is contained within the Green Deal of the EU's project, by which our green hydrogen program is part of, it literally is part of that Global Gateway project, is that literally that Critical Raw Material Act of the EU states that EU manufacturers and production hubs need access to affordable critical raw materials. They're looking after themselves for themselves, not for us. I'll say it again. They're looking after themselves for themselves, not for us. Now, Namibia's particular concerns is well documented. We know what we want. We know what we want to achieve. The African Union's particular concerns, or let me say all 54 African states' concerns, currently right now we're sort of like on bad terms with Morocco. I understand why. It's because of Western Sahara. Western Sahara to me has not made sense because Western Sahara technically is not like a Namibia-South Africa situation. Western Sahara in history was technically a Moroccan territory. But hey, I'm sitting in Southern Africa, obviously. That's a particular dimension right there. And obviously, Morocco is not friendly to the rest of Africa. And because we've obviously indicated to Morocco, we are not friendly to Morocco. And Western Sahara, by the way, is not even recognized by the UN. Which is weird. But hey, you know, this is Africa. So we know what the particular problems are for African countries in the AU membership club is that we all share the same particular deprivations. Well invested, well installed, well constructed, well erected infrastructure that serves not just our home populations in each country, but also the African continent on a broader scale, because if you don't know, Africa also has literally the four-pillar or three-pillar infrastructure roadmap. And even though Ali Youssouf, who's the AU Commission chairperson, cited it's not just about the roads and bridges and railway tracks and airports, but it literally is roads, railways, bridges, and airports, and harbors. It literally is that. It is those things that technically will be able to actually allow Africa to achieve the revenue projections or the revenue levels that Africa wants to achieve. It is literally that, those things that will make them achieve that. Now, why do I say that? Well, in the concept note for that Luanda summit that happened earlier today, the concept note actually has a different particular figure from the other concept note that comes through from the AU's development, the AU's Development Dynamics Report for 2025. It actually came out at the start of this month, of October. Now, in this particular report, the overview states here that Africa has to invest $155 billion per year in infrastructure development up to 2040. So 16 years, they need to invest $155 billion per year till 2040 to literally reach the level that they are supposed to reach. The level that we are supposed to benefit from, if each African in our respective African countries. They've got to spend $155 billion in infrastructure investments across the continent per year for 16 years. They've got to spend that much money. Here's the problem. The brief for today's particular engagement cited specifically that only $80 billion is currently financed. There's another particular range of this particular investment framework that they also cited. The Dynamics report speaks, is more specific to $155 billion, so I think that was averaged out. The brief for today's particular engagement cites, the continent needs an estimated $130 to $170 billion in infrastructure investment per year, yet only $80 billion is currently financed. Bridging the gap is crucial for economic growth, job creation, and regional integration. I'll stop there. The first pillar of the African Union is continental integration. SADC has a regional integration plan, economic integration plan. Africa has a continental integration plan. What does integration speak to? You must have roads that are standardized between member countries. For example, you can't have broader roads meant for a car that's manufactured in the United States, because in America they actually produce some ridiculously big vehicles for everyday or household use. And that car is not cleared or certified or standardized to operate on Namibian roads. Now, obviously, we make exceptions because, let's say, if you're coming here as a tourist with that car, you'll be allowed to drive through. And you'll be allowed to leave the country. Another particular consideration is obviously also regional integration or continental integration is based upon whether or not people can actually fly to you. Now, Namibia did a very good thing, which is now starting to look like a very difficult thing to handle and maintain and manage by October this year. And it was launched in January of this year, or slightly earlier, I think back in last year. And that obviously was the e-visa rollout. Now, the e-visa rollout, dear listeners, like I've mentioned a little bit on many times here on Eagle FM specifically, is that with the e-visa application process, is that you can sit anywhere and apply for a visa to Namibia. It's electronic. One guy showed specifically how he applied to an e-visa to Iran. He was an Australian video blogger who decided to fly to Tehran, you know, because he wanted to see literally as an Australian or as an American. I know he's an Australian, yeah. As an Australian, would he not be allowed to tour Iran or the city of Tehran? And he had to fill in an e-visa platform for a sanctioned country. And specifically, you know, things went smoothly. It's just that the picture he showed me about the, not the picture, but how he explained the currency situation in Iran was a little bit scary, because I was like, huh? There's a money that you find, there's a specific value of the Iranian currency that you find at the airport, and then you get that currency, and then you have to go to a bank, and then you get a different currency. Now, another thing that's also an issue, obviously, in the rest of Africa, is if you guys don't know of money exchanges, please, you will not be prepared for money exchanges if you drive even across the border into Zambia. So if you don't know what a money exchanger is, please, guys, please, if you've never toured into the rest of Africa, me, Dwight, I'm warning you, be prepared for people making spot prices about currency based upon what you look like or which part you come from. The systems, the processes, the institutions, the markets, the economies that we are used to, whereby the markets literally are, they look legit, let me rather say that, they look legit, they work to your favor, they work in your benefit, they are clear and straightforward. You know that I am safe when I go and buy products in this particular retailer, in this particular mall. Things look adequate for consumption, for usage, for interaction. I warn you today, dear listeners, speak to any Namibian that has traveled across the African continent. It's the Wild West. But before we continue, another ad break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
And obviously with responsibility, dear listeners, you know, you can enjoy that responsibility sometimes. But where we find ourselves here on this particular 5:30 session here on Eagle FM, you're in the company of the Home Run. And yes, we're having a very lovely particular discussion. I did see the phone line flashing a little bit earlier to the caller who tried to come through. Don't worry, there is no Ramadan or participation in Ramadan. You can kindly come through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen to what you guys want to share. Your particular insights into the subject matter, and let's engage. Where we left off just before the break, when I said it looks like the Wild West in some cases, it literally is that particular scenario. Please, guys, if you are used to your various malls here in Namibia, your Grove malls, your Comas Grove malls, your Maroon malls, or even your Vernial malls in Namibia, or the lovely malls at the coast even. Just understand that the rest of Africa, in many cases, don't have a similar thing. Yes, you would obviously find that in Nigeria, but would you be used to experiencing and seeing 200 Nigerians? Because I remember at one stage particularly, I felt a little bit claustrophobic when I saw what 3 million Cape Town inhabitants look like. 3 million. You don't want to be walking on the pavement at lunch, guys. It's a lot of people. Now, obviously, another particular thing that's also a particular development that needs to be addressed is, and I still believe this particular point, is the fundamental thing to sort out. Flying to each other's countries. Guys. Earlier this year, we had that one particular function here in Namibia where the guy from Afriexim Bank had to fly 16 hours from Cairo to Windhoek. And he had to stay over in Johannesburg for his connecting flight. And I thought to myself, 16 hours. It's a 5-hour flight from Windhoek to Addis Ababa in a straight line. 16 hours. What is going on? I understand the case specifically at one stage where Namibia cited at the start of this year that we need to bring back our lost national airline. But everyone will tell us, but then you need to be able to take responsibility for the running costs of that thing, the operational costs of that thing. You should take responsibility for that thing. At the heart of that particular discussion was also, like I've referenced a little bit earlier as well, Namibia or the defunct company now of Air Namibia concentrated a lot on the South African routes and to Frankfurt. And at one stage they had Paris. They could take you to Paris, France. What? What? And at the heart of that particular talk was, Namibians weren't flyers. Yeah, obviously, if you had to go to Germany or you had to go to Europe, you'll obviously fly. But Namibians weren't flyers specifically to South Africa. Now they might be flyers. But now it's also discussion in terms of, you know, how big is that number of Namibians that can afford a plane ticket to Johannesburg and then afford a shuttle from that airport to their destination? You see, at the heart and at the core of every sector, and specifically for Africa to achieve its particular dream of the integration, we really need to encourage African tourism between each other. We need to show each other the tourism markets, each other's tourism markets. We need to entice Ghanaians to fly here, because the issue for the Nigerian, Ghanaian, that whole Gold Coast neighborhood there, up until Togo, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, them, is that they all fly. They want to go to the US. They want to fly to the UK. They want to go to Europe. They want to see those places. They want to go see those places. And in here, in Namibian context, Namibians are telling you, or our Gen Zs and the millennials will tell you, I don't want to be in Namibia. I don't want to think about anything else African. And they go live in Cape Town, or they go live in, what's that town in South Africa? What's that town's name? Tochman. Or they go live, what's that university town? I almost said George. It's where the University of Rhodes is based. I think you guys know which town I'm talking about. Where Rhodes University is based. Then they go live there because it's got that, you know, that arts and culture vibe and that student life vibe. And then those young Namibians come and tell you about, you know, how they were so in tune there with the social movements there in South Africa. And you're like just blinking and going like, what kind of a Namibian are you? Did you go and study in the US? Where were you studying? Now, if you factor in that kind of a perspective, you can obviously see that tourism is at the heart of everything. I'm a big advocate, or not activist, but you know, an advocate for the tourism market to literally connect all of Africa. If you've got transport installations and transport infrastructure that connects each other, if the Lobito Corridor is not to be purposed only for transporting materials and mined minerals or extracted minerals, but it also incorporates a civilian use, why not? You can ride a train, a lovely train, through three countries, all the way to Lobito in Angola. And then you can see the lovely warm waters of that west, of that coastline of Angola. If you climb that train in Zambia, ride through that small point of DRC, and you cross the whole of Angola to reach Lobito. But believe you me, if you go and read those documents, those project documents about the Lobito Corridor, the only thing it will tell you is about tankers, cargo ships docking at Lobito and the train transporting raw materials. That's all it will tell you. Where do those tankers and those cargo ships go? They go to Northern Hemisphere economies to be bought, processed, resold, refined, and positioned into other products that at one stage might be sold to us. The Lobito Corridor itself literally just speaks about transporting raw materials. It says nothing about enhancing tourism, connecting communities alongside that route with each other, enhancing trade capacity between the three particular SADC neighbors in that regard around the project.
it also doesn't speak towards improving transport systems in each of the three countries by introducing this particular affordable railway project that aims to primarily provide a hybrid solution to transport needs in each of those three countries. Africa has a great demand for infrastructure installation. Namibia has a great demand for infrastructure installation and upgrading. And the infrastructure installation discussion or dimension is primarily based upon how to alleviate a deprivation of access to affordable transport mediums. You see, guys, if you go to Europe, you'll find Europeans that can't drive cars. They will even tell you, why must I learn to drive? Why must I have a license? Here in Namibia, I was told literally at 19, get your license or you will never be able to get a job in Namibia, Dwight, as a man. As a man, even, they genderize it. As a man, you will never get a job as a man if you don't have a license in Namibia. You won't even be able to date as a man. Yeah, guys, that's literally what I was told. I told my friends, you guys are lying, until I was smacked against my forehead by even family members who told me, Dwight, in Africa, you need a license to drive a car. Get your license, because being empowered in that thing is being more empowered than having a grade 12 certificate. Being empowered in having a driver's license is more empowering than having a grade 12 certificate. Having a driver's license in any of the particular coded brackets of transport in Namibia is more empowering than having a 3-year bachelor's degree from any of Namibia's big three universities. You guys think I'm lying? You guys think I'm lying? There are truck drivers that probably earn more than me. They're truck drivers that earn more than me. That's all they do. They just drive. They drive a truck. That's all they do. They are couriers from courier companies that earn probably more than me. So when you obviously see the particular sectors that literally play pivotal roles. Firstly, in trade integration in the African context. Transport sector is at the heart of it. Tourism sector is at the heart of it. They literally lie on top of each other in terms of how you can stack them up in terms of ranking of importance. Your financial sector is at the heart of it. But in many cases, you have Africans that are just too eager to send money out of the continent. Your money is already too weak to compete with any other purchasing power in the world, except for obviously in parts of Asia and parts of South America. Maar jy stuur jou geld uit die land uit. Guys! Guys, I can understand sending the money from Namibia to South Africa, from Namibia to Angola, from Namibia to Botswana, from Namibia to Zimbabwe even, to Zambia even. I don't understand sending the money to Germany, to the UK. First and foremost, you'll be penalized, or whoever's receiving that money, or whatever you've got to do, you've got to factor in. If I'm ordering a product from another continent, that is Europe or North America, you've got to factor in banking costs. Your bank will penalize you for sending that money so far to a country that has a better value for its currency over your country's currency. Why would you do that? But before we continue, ad break.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's five-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We come back, dear listeners, but before we continue, we quickly take a live read session to bridge us over into the last 15 minutes of the day's session here on The Home Run. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to 1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. You look under the yellow cap, dial *142*45845#, punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to our social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Pavitra University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education for the following programs. Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee, $230 Namibian, and the application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever. So we come back, dear listeners, heading into our last 13 minutes here on today's Home Run session. And primarily, the discussion is pretty clear, pretty straightforward, and it actually resoundingly speaks towards, let's just sort our stuff out. Let's just sort out our own house in order to achieve or reach the particularly desired level of working with each other. Now, that particular report that I cited a little bit earlier about Africa's development dynamic, I don't know, they love going for such particular poetic titles for these reports that come out from the AU. So they cite here that Africa's Development Dynamics Report addresses the question of how African policymakers can accelerate infrastructure development to transform the economies of the continent and its five regions. In 2025 specifically, Africa's real gross domestic product was projected to grow at 3.9%. That's for 2025. Outpacing the GDP growth of Latin America and the Caribbean, but below that of the developing parts of Asia, which is at 4.4%. Now, investing in quality infrastructure can further boost economic growth, regional integration and employment. Integrated infrastructure networks can enhance firm productivity and connect trade networks, contributing to fulfilling the AU's agenda of 2063, which is the vision of a world-class infrastructure that crisscrosses Africa. But the infrastructure is also a precondition for productive transformation. And it literally gets me to a point that I left halfway through at the start of the discussion, where we started on what part of Namibia's budget you must look at. Now, the part of Namibia's budget that I said you must look at is the development budget. Don't care, don't worry about a ministry's budget. Look at the development budget of the government. Now, it's the same particular thing that you've got to look at as well in terms of what the sentence say. A precondition. Infrastructure is a precondition. Now, The British economics professor that I love, he's actually an accounting professor that I love, you know, watching his particular explainers on YouTube about, Richard Murphy. He explains, because he's obviously also speaking from a UK perspective in terms of what's happening in the UK political scene there in his country, but it's an explainer that's universally applied wherever you find modern day economic policy making in any developing country. And the modern economic policy making is supposedly the policy making in terms of neoliberal economics, whereby they want, that's now the multilateral platforms, we should have smaller governments, but we should reach optimum levels of sound governance and having heightened levels of service provision, which is a little bit problematic because many African countries specifically have a problem of collecting on a local authority level their revenue, their taxation revenue. In a Namibian context, you have to pay for your water and electricity. That is the revenue collection. And that money trickles back upwards to the state's coffers. Because then urban rural development can say, okay, as a local authority, you guys are doing pretty well, Windhoek. Look at you guys outperforming yourselves. You know, good stuff, good stuff. But if you go to many other African countries, they have local authorities. They have a huge problem in service provision. Let me say that again. They have a huge problem in service provision. Now, this is where things get a little bit awkward. Richard Murphy, this emeritus professor of accounting from the University of Sheffield, who I love following on YouTube, explains, for a government to actually reap the rewards or the benefits of its taxation collection or its tax collecting efforts, that same government should first have spent money in the economy, meaning should first have built hospitals, should first have built affordable housing, should first have built schools, should first have built sustainable infrastructure, should first have invested in various sectors, thus to reap the rewards that it has invested. It's a simple, straightforward theory. In many cases, it's a theory that literally you can see work. You cannot come and say, we cannot spend money because this is only as much as we could make. I understand in Namibia's context, we can only spend what is allowed because we have so many things that we've got to try and upgrade, try to invest in ourselves. Because for the first time in a very long time, which is the start of this financial, this particular developmental budget sequence or this particular framework, that Namibia is technically funding itself for its own particular projects. But we are still getting donor funding for certain particular targeted programs across the country. We're still getting that. It's not like we can walk away or turn away from it. We're still getting donor funding. And there's nothing wrong with donor funding, with receiving donor funding, or enjoying donor funding for the particular purpose that it is meant to be enjoyed for, i.e., particularly the developmental need that needs to be met. But you also have to ask a question. You see, you can build all the lovely roads. You can build all the other stuff. The question still comes through every time. Okay, so now what are you doing in terms of commercial endeavors? How's your local private sector operating? Namibia's local private sector from the public-private forum of last week, some of them actually want to sit in on the boardroom meetings of state-owned entities and in state-owned companies of the government. They want to be board members there. It's a 50-50 dimension, that one. It's literally a 50-50 dimension. Some cases, I could understand, for example, when the governor of our central bank, Governor Gavagap, he could not hold on to his personal company when he became governor. He had to sell the company off because literally it says there the governor must not have a side hustle of something. He literally had to get rid of that entity that he built himself. But obviously when it comes to a governance discussion and a governance oversight scenario, we once again sit at the trust corner of things. We sit at the trust phase of things. Because in so many cases, when the private sector in Namibia has dealt with the state-owned sector of Namibia on major things, a lot of negatives came about. A lot of negative stuff came about. I'll say it again. A lot of negative things came about. There's a whole bunch of examples that you can pull off the top of your head. You can literally start from that contractor that didn't completely, you know, complete the construction for Namra at some of the border crossings. You can start from there. That's a negative number one. And that just starts from a basic commercial activity in terms of, purchase and sale. An agreement based upon purchase and sale. Straightforward stuff. Now, obviously, at the heart of everything, Namibia in its own right is sorting out its own growing pains, or its own growth pains, or its own, ailments. And don't worry about us, guys. You can see from all the particular reporting that we're bringing to you here on Eagle FM, Namibia is doing its thing. We are doing our thing. My worry is, we're on the African continent together. How are we going to be viewing this particular neighborhood, this particular engagement with the rest of the continent in terms of actually making the continent work for everyone? Actually setting the scene for everyone to understand how this particular continent functions to the best of the ability it should be functioning at. How do you get it to that particular level? How do we fly to each other? And then we realize, oh, there's no airline that Sao Tome and Principe and Namibia have between each other. Oh, wow, would you look at that? Because none of us have national airlines. And if you go and ask some of the private sector partners that operate in Namibia's airs or in Namibia's skies, hey, guys, how about, you know, you guys operating between Sao Tome and Principe and Namibia? And then you'll be asked, are there clients flying there and are there clients flying back? We're not flying back with empty planes, paying airport taxes and fuel and service and service costs at each particular airport. We're not going to carry a burden that's going to just be a loss make, that's just going to be a loss at every stop. Because in the private sector, you're literally told, cut your losses. You manage your costs. You manage your losses. Now, at the heart of everything, yes, you guys heard from a particular, let's call him a political figure in the African Union Commission. And yes, obviously he was delivering a particular political speech to political leaders of various respected countries of NAF, of the continent. However, there's a lot of fact and there's a lot of truth associated to what he's saying. The reason why I included fact and truth is because, as I've countlessly said, a fact is an undeniable reality. It's a constant. This is not an algebraic expression where you can make up numbers and descriptions. A fact is it's constant. It just stays there. Even though you get constant numbers in algebraic expressions or in algebra or that mathematical branch of mathematics, a constant stays a constant. It's the only predictable variable that stays the same. Before we say our goodbyes to the listeners, we're going to take a short ad break and we're going to come back right after that.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting.
to moments shared and good vibes anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Coming back there from the extended break, the listeners, and obviously that takes us to the top of the hour, specifically here on the Home Run. Before I say my goodbye and before David technically steps in, the message of the day that actually, you know, stems from all of this is we have to build a little bit quicker. We have to build a little bit quicker, and we have to act a little bit quicker, and we have to achieve goals a little bit quicker. You see, the whole reason as to why Namibia had that public-private forum discussion for 2 days last week, where the president literally attended both sessions herself, and I will have a discussion about that in its whole entirety and its value proposition in terms of that conversation, is primarily that we are all part of the same ecosystem. Public sector, private sector, we need to work together. We need to work together. Our Minister of Finance went and found out from her own public sector colleagues across the country, why is the development budget being rolled out so slow? First thing that all of those guys said was the first thing that was also said to the same oversight committee of legal affairs and the constitution, who had a particular this engagement with the judiciary and the Ministry of Justice back in last year, was literally, it's the Procurement Act, and it's the procurement process that's cumbersome. And it's also a scenario, literally, in terms of what was also introduced in terms of the procurement legislation a little earlier, is that literally, it seems that there's a bit too much or too many disputes coming about, and that the dispute process has to be fast tracked. So you obviously see these particular dimensions. You obviously see these particular talking points come about. Now, as the two particular talking points and the two particular dimensions obviously should illuminate to you how an economy should be functioning and running, that there should be aspects of synergy, and obviously you take into consideration that there are certain particular, you know, there'll be some snags here and there'll be some speed humps there and there'll be some hurdles over there, but that the majority of the process technically just moves forward. It just works. Just functions. We sit with that particular insight, and obviously it brings us to the end for the day's session, dear listeners. On that note, stay tuned for the BES, and we'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.